Hey everybody, we are back with another edition of Inside the Music, and I have a great guest on here. She's been on my show several times in the past, and she's a great talent, and we're going to learn a little bit about her. We're going to take you deep inside of her life and her brain and how she comes up with her music, and it's going to be a lot of fun for the next 60 minutes. We're going to be playing four of her songs, and I hope that this will give you a reason to go listen to her and maybe even come out and see her tour, because that's what she wants probably more than anything. So welcome to the show, Sherry Rowe. How are you doing today?
Thank you for having me. I always love this. I'm good. How are you doing?
We're doing good. We're doing really
Good.
good. And we are just starting this new show, and I think it's fun because it brings people to a whole new level of their entertainment. I mean, it's not every day you get to talk to your and learn about your favorite musicians and actors and stuff like that in a different setting than you would on just a regular news show.
Yeah, and I mean, that's always a good opportunity for me too, because I love connecting on a level that goes beyond the show. So it helps me feel more connected the next time I do see someone out in the crowd. Maybe I know they've kind of gotten to know me a little bit better. And, because every time you're out there, you're putting yourself out there. And, without that connection, without fans really getting to know you, it's, sometimes it can just be just another song, just another show, just another face. So.
Yeah. So this is basically going to be like a conversation, like they have on the Barbra Streisand thing with Saturday Night Live. It's what we're going to be doing. It's very informal, but we're going to have a lot of fun talking about it. So the first part we're going to talk about is how you got into music, inspiration, stuff like that. So kind of tell everybody when was it for you that you realized, I want to be a musician?
Well, it's interesting. My mom and dad, neither of them were musicians or professional in the music industry at all. My mom definitely could sing, and she would always write songs for us when we were little, lullabies, and she could definitely carry a tune. But my sister and I, she's 4 years older than me, we literally put on shows for the family since we could walk and talk. I mean, we were just always reenacting musicals. And as I got a little bit older, I found myself just writing songs as a kid. Growing up in Arizona, I would, hop on horseback on the weekends, and I would be writing songs as I was just kind of riding along and hearing the rhythm of the hooves. And I feel like music was just innately part of us. As I got a little bit older, I was singing in different singing contests as a teenager, and I was in choir in school. And I remember a choir teacher kind of was going from person to person, kind of helping everyone understand, were they an alto, soprano, et cetera. And she passed by in front of me, and after class, she pulled me aside and commented on the tone of my voice. And she and another teacher put together a solo for me for the school performance that was coming up in the spring. And so that was very encouraging and kind of made me think, well, maybe there's something to this. And then, I was singing in church with my sister and sister-in-law. Pastor started to say, hey, will you sing before I speak on this? Will you sing when I go travel here? And really, the doors just kind of opened. And from there, my sisters and I were assigned to a deal. We were singing contemporary Christian kind of country pop music. And we really, the rest is history. I've made so many great relationships in the industry, and people have been so eager to kind of help coach me through what it means to be a songwriter, the basic formulas of that. Sitting in rooms with some amazingly talented veterans in the industry who really kind of took me under their wing. And country music was a great place to land for me after my career with my sisters. We kind of went our separate ways musically, and I grew up listening to country, so here I am.
It's really interesting that you say the church was
Yeah.
like a big influence on it too, because I've talked to a lot of musicians. I've worked in the music industry, and it seems like that is the launch pad for
Yeah.
most people's career. I don't understand why.
Yeah.
What makes it so special about a church that makes you want to do that?
Well, it's interesting. That's a great question, and I haven't really thought this through, but off the top of my head, I feel like as creatives, as artists, there's something about connecting with people on a very deep level. And yes, we're entertainers. We love putting on a high energy show, and that's part of it. But there's something on a deep level, the way we're made. We want to connect with people on a level that includes purpose and healing. And some of the things that are really spiritual, that go beyond the show and beyond, you know, your practical application of music. And I think so often we connect with our spirituality, and we're kind of that vessel in between what is happening in the room spiritually and the congregation. And there's something that we identify with as artists that, for me, I feel that this is a gift that was given to me, and I feel like I have a responsibility. I'm building a relationship with people all the time when I sing for them, and that could be in the church or, you know, at a festival. There's still a relationship that's happening, and I think music takes people somewhere. It helps people to get beyond this natural place we're in. And in this world today, we need that more than ever. But I think that's why so many artists start out in the church. And I don't know whether it's they were already in a spiritual place and then decided to take that beyond the walls of the church, or if just naturally we're just drawn to this spiritual connection that we have with people when we deliver music.
You know, thinking between the choir at school and the church, I would think for me, a church would be a lot easier to sing in front of because they're not brutal like kids were. You know, kids will definitely make fun of you, they will tear you apart, but churches generally won't do that. I
That's
don't know if
true.
that's always a good thing either, because it's like sometimes you gotta know the truth and you gotta hear the truth to, you know, make sure you're doing the right thing or you're improving. But at the same time, the eyes are friendlier than looking at the crowd inside of a school, and the stage fright probably isn't as bad, so you kind of get used to that.
Yeah, I mean, to address both parts of that, I think you're right. Like the congregations, I mean, we're all there to put our focus upwards, and it's not meant to have a spotlight on the person delivering the music. So there is, it is much more forgiving. But at the same time, second part of that, I feel honestly such a big responsibility when I'm in a setting where I'm leading worship or pointing to God. So I wouldn't necessarily call it stage fright, but there's a weight that I carry with me. When I'm leading people in worship or singing a song in church, it carries kind of a reverence that's different than jumping up on a stage and kind of having fun with it. So yeah, that's kind of the way I view it.
I can also see, and just by hearing your voices, and you're hearing your voice, you don't have voices, I mean, not yet. Probably in our heads, but not yet. I can hear it in your, I can see it in your eyes, I can hear it in your voice that God does play a really big role in your music, and it's hard to stay true to what God wants. How do you manage to do so, especially in the entertainment industry, which is sex, drugs, and rock and roll?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I honestly think that we need to find our footing, so to speak, and we need to know what our cornerstone is. We need to know who we are, regardless of what we do for a living. Even if it's just at the grocery store having a conversation with somebody, I think for me, every conversation I have potentially is an opportunity to have something that goes beyond the practical, you know, everyday stuff. I mean, I try to be really aware. I've always been kind of intuitive, and it's important to me to have purpose in everything I do. So for me, going into the industry, yeah, I think we're up against image and branding and sometimes a lot of competition and a lot of rejection. But for me, being grounded in knowing that I belong to God and that He has called me for a purpose, you know, it helps me to realize that I have my lane. I have my story. I have, you know, my future and everything that God has called me to do. And it really takes the pressure off, you know. I think as I grow older, even it's even more apparent that authenticity is so important. And being true to ourselves really helps God to use us in such a bigger way. We kind of get our ego and our idea of what we should be out of the way, and it's much more effective and much more fulfilling.
I agree. I mean, I when I worked with the band I worked with, we went down to Miami and we were putting a show on in front of Jesse James Dupree, who was also part of Jackal and Full Throttle Saloon. And that night, I swear, all 12 commandments were broken in one night. I had never seen such debauchery in my life,
Oh
and
my
thank
gosh.
God I didn't drink. But now I will never be able to unsee what I saw that
Yeah.
night.
Oh my
So
gosh.
it's very
Yeah.
easy to get wrapped up into this, and I don't think people completely understand that. I mean, it's different when
Yeah.
you're on the road. It's hard to stay true to yourself.
It's true. And I think having a community of people who keep you grounded and who you're accountable to and who will call it like they see it, and they'll say, "Hey, this isn't like you. What's going on?" Or, just in love, call you out on some of that stuff and keep you in line. And honestly, I want people to know too that I come from a past that's full of a lot of darkness. And, I've had my share of a lot of heavy partying. And, as a teenager, I was a runaway. And I have a story that when people see me and hear the music that I'm doing now, and they hear me talk about Christ or being in the church, or, the spiritual aspect that I believe pertains to what I do, many times they don't believe that I could have come from where I have come from. And I think that's important to mention, because regardless of what is, someone is going through or doing in their lives right now, I just feel like there's this hope and this love that I hope the light of God will leave people with, as I'm doing what I'm doing, as I'm just singing a country song that has nothing to do with God. I hope that my life and the hope that I have now, and I hope all of that brings people to something that they can take with them that lasts.
I love music because it's so it's one of the things that soothes my soul, and it can hit different emotions. I truly believe that when you think about it, the closest thing we have to time travel is music,
Yeah.
because you can remember your first kiss, what was playing on the radio. You can it,
Yeah.
it will take you to different times in your life
Yeah.
and certain experiences. So I love music, and it's a great way to tell stories, which I'm sure you know about. And each genre has their own version of that. But I think one of the closest ones to it is the country music. You can really, it's a different style. It's not meant to be upbeat and poppy all the time.
Right.
Why did you choose country music? What was your inspiration for country?
Well, growing up in Arizona, it was always kind of in the background. We did a lot of camping and horseback riding. I was always outside, and my dad loved the classics. He loved Johnny Cash, Patsy Cline, and Merle Haggard. And I can remember going for drives when I was little and hearing that music. We'd out here in Arizona during the spring, the orange blossoms are intoxicating, and the smell of the alfalfa fields. And I remember the windows being down and hearing these voices from history, and they're so prominent and moving, and just creates this feeling, or they create this feeling. And that stayed with me. And then my brother took us camping a lot, and he's 13 years older than me, and he loved classic rock. So I'd hear the Eagles in the background, and I was always hearing harmony, whether it was country music or, country rock. And I loved it. And I would just try to find harmonies just for fun. And this is the Wild West. And I've lived in Nashville. I've toured all over the country and in different parts of the world. And Arizona continues to inspire me. It really is a hub for some of the greats in country music. And it was a natural place for me to land, especially coming from singing in the church and singing temporary Christian music. It's important to me to be able to tell my story in an authentic way and to be who I am. And it would be impossible for me to be somebody in music and then be somebody else in my life and not have those two cross over authentically. So, yes, country music is very much a place that I can sing about family and faith and stories about everyday life. Oh, yeah, that's why I landed where I did. And it feels right.
Well, I know this segment is usually the longest because it lets people really kind of get into your background. But as an artist myself, not a music artist, but an artist, and working with other artists, it's a very, I guess, saturated market. And therefore, it's hard to be a unique person and have your own style that anybody can listen to and say, okay, that's Sherry, you know?
Right.
Because I hear a lot of people, they sound this. So how do you stay unique? and fresh and grow?
That's a great question. I would say initially when I put out some of my first country singles and records, I can hear it in my voice when I go back and listen that I did not fully know who I was. And I definitely can hear what I would say is definitely immaturity in that I really thought I had to try to be something else. So as I've written more, and especially in this last year, life has a way, and when you go through some heavy things in life, it kind of shakes out some stuff that maybe isn't real. And that's really what's happened with me recently. So I would say I've grown and I've gone from being in this place where, okay, I'm asking what's trending, what's the industry saying, what are the people on my team saying I should do? Taking into consideration all those things, which are valid to still consider, but they were steering the ship and I was kind of leaving my authentic self on the side. Now, fast forward to these last few songs, especially this last year, I'm more in the production seat. I'm taking my time. I'm choosing the parts that I've been hearing in my head. I went back and re-recorded one of the songs that was really important to me because it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. And I was with a label at the time and I needed to go back and reclaim that one. And how I stay authentic, I think I've just recently in recent years begun to figure out how to do that, to be honest.
And it's good that you do because it helps you grow. And
Yeah.
the people that want to stay to the same thing because it's comforting is great, but you can really elevate yourself by just taking a chance.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's truly art, really, when you start to step into that place and you're kind of letting your mind and your heart wander a little bit. I think that's what people can tap into that. They don't know that that's why they're tapping in, but there's an intangible thing that happens. Even with art beyond music, I think it's, the greatest artists have been the ones who have went outside the box and brought something into the world that only they could bring.
Yeah. So we are going to be playing your the first song of the show today, and what we're going to do to kind of work on is family gathering. I kind of like this because we're talking about family here. So what is the inspiration behind family gathering?
So Family Gathering first was released around the holidays. It was re-released in its new version, which that's the one I was just referencing that I kind of went back and reclaimed. It was also released in the fall. And although Thanksgiving and Christmas are the big holidays where we all get together, we're with family all year round, birthdays and different holidays. And that dynamic is so unique and so special to me. And there's not a family that has not encountered struggle or division. Or hurt feelings or broken relationships. And families are made up of so many different personalities, but it's that weaving together that creates this beautiful thing, right? And we have this community, and whether we have blood relatives or our people are our friends that have become family, it's so important to have your people and your tribe. And we've all gone up to the front door at a get together where we're a little nervous about seeing this person or seeing that person or what's going to happen when we do this. And we have all these things that kind of go through our minds. And that's where the song starts out. And in my family, my grandparents were raised in Poland, and potato salad is a big deal, especially around springtime, around Easter. And my mom made it for years, and now I'm the one who makes it. So the very first line is show up with potato salad. And so I literally can imagine myself showing up at the front door. And like all of us, you walk in and you survey the room and you kind of take in who's there, who's late, who's, whatever, fill in the blank. So a lot of this, the song was drawn from real inspiration, and some of the characters are fictional. But we all have that dynamic. And at the end of the day, we don't know who may be in the room the next time we all get together. We're not guaranteed beyond this moment. So I think just taking it in, the good, bad, the ugly, all of it is really a beautiful.
And what do you hope people take from it when they listen to it?
I think maybe a chance to smile a little bit at some of the quirks and differences that we may have in our family. And for the things that we can't quite smile at that may be a little bit deeper and harder to deal with, maybe a little bit of hope and encouragement to take a deep breath and maybe revisit that conversation or that difficult time and realize that, take inventory and realize that we may not be given another chance to have that resolve.
And with that, we have it playing right now. At the end of the song, we're going to come back and we're going to talk to Sherry about more stuff. So don't go anywhere and enjoy.
as a day could be. Our brand of functionality. Hug on mama, kiss it clear in her Dixie cup. We're all that we're has more than just some lemonade in Uncle Jerry's late. Well, our hometown football star had a late night. From the look in her eye, he and his girl might be on the edge of the fight. We're holding brand new babies, getting caught up with the ladies. You've seen it all, still standing tall with the man who taught us how to throw.
I hope you enjoyed the song, and Sherry's got more to share. We're going to be now diving into her writing process, because if you've ever tried writing a song, you probably realize it's very frustrating. It's not your typical poem, but it still has to have some type of like a rhythm to it, and it's very hard to do. And when people can do it, it's amazing, and I have a lot of respect for that. So, Sherry, tell us a little bit about how you got into even writing songs of your own as opposed to using somebody to write them for you.
Gosh, songwriting is really, it's my favorite part, I think, beyond connecting with people. I think those two kind of are right at the top. As I said, growing up, I would find myself writing songs, not with any kind of aspiration of being a songwriter, just it's just what I did. I was little, coming out of my room saying, "Hey, mom, I wrote a song about my room," when I was in like fourth grade. When I started singing with my sisters in church, I had a few little pieces and parts, that's what I would call them. They really weren't songs, but I had a notebook with a bunch of scribbles and had some melodies in my head. And we started working with an amazing producer, Phil Johnson, and he had written some of the biggest hits in Christian music. And the way we ended up meeting him was just one of those crazy stories. Like, we could have never anticipated that. And he has such a beautiful heart. I haven't spoken with him in a very long time, but he really was key in me finding my skill and my confidence as a songwriter. He asked me if I was, and I said, not really. I mean, I have this little thing in there. And he said, well, let me see what you have. And I showed him one thing in particular, and he looked at it, and he's very tenderhearted and very patient. And the next time he came back, it was like 2 weeks later, maybe, he brought back a recording, and he had taken those pieces and parts that I had. And as a very talented songwriter, he kind of put the form together, added a little bit, made a little demo with just keys, and he played it for me. And with tears in his eyes, this is your song. He said, you're a songwriter. And I'll never forget that moment. I just suddenly, it was like my mind opened. I felt confident. And really, that first project that we did with him was the first time I had written for an entire album. And my sister co-wrote some of that record with me. And now I understand and value the importance of being in the room with people better than you and not being intimidated by that, but going in with the mentality of being a sponge and realizing that I could step into that too. So I just continue to grow, and something I love so much.
I think when I have sat down to do it, I get frustrated easily because of the fact that it's hard to come up with a rhythm to it. Words are not necessarily a problem, but making it into a song that's going to flow is. Maybe because of the fact I'm not a musician, but at the same time, that shouldn't be a reason why I couldn't do it. So, what are the key components when it comes to songwriting that's going to make a song successful?
That's a great question. I think that a song, so when I if I'm writing a song on my own, I play very little guitar. And so when I'm writing by myself, I'm writing lyric and melody, and I'm figuring out the whole pre-production in my head before I even have any chords underneath. And then I'll get with either a co-writer or a player, and I can hear what, I understand the musicality of it. I understand where I want tension. I understand, where I want things to open up and sound more like a major chord would make everything sound more open and up. And, I understand all of those things, but I'm just not skilled enough. Well, I probably could write with guitar, but the way I see it, I'm surrounded by these amazing musicians, and their encyclopedia of chord progression ideas goes way beyond what I'm bringing to the table. So to give the song the best life, I think it's important to either have great players you're working with or other great co-writers. But I always have that kind of the have the song basically mapped out. This last, I just was just writing the other day, and I did something I haven't done the first time. I knew that I wanted this song to kind of have a train beat, and I could hear the whole song in my head. So for the first time, Stephen Bowman and I wrote it together. We wrote all the lyrics together, but we didn't have a melody yet. So I just set up a train beat, found the BPM, the tempo that I wanted that felt right for what I was hearing in my head, and I wrote the entire melody and figured out the whole map for the song based on just singing with that. So for me, it's trying to find what's matching what I'm in my head. I've already got so many ideas for instrumentation and the basic roadmap, but I think a great song is great in its rawest form. And I was told that a long time ago, and it's true. If you can sing a song that you wrote with just a guitar or just keys, if that song sounds great already, you're on the right track. You shouldn't have to make up for a song that isn't great by throwing a bunch of big production. It should be really great, simple, and then even better to it out.
There is the old adage, what came first, the chicken or the egg? For you, what comes first, the beat in your head or the lyrics?
Usually it's a hook. There's a new song that's coming out called The One That Got Away, but it's got a way, like he's got a way of, holding me, that kind of thing. So it's usually the hook first, and sometimes that includes the melody. Sometimes it's just that. I mean, if you look at my voice memo in my phone, I have there's like hundreds of little bits of, little melodies and little hook lines, and that's usually where I start. Occasionally, you'll get a lot more than that all at once, but those times, anybody will tell you, those times are few and far between where you just sit down and it just comes to you. I feel like those are supernatural moments. And, writing with co-writers, I come into a room, and if it's me, I'm saying, I have, say, these five ideas. What's everybody feeling today? Are we feeling happy, party song, sad, drive and roll down the windows? It's really good to kind of come into that co-write with a lot of different ideas. Just don't know what mood everybody's going to be in. And then the goal is to finish the song before everybody goes on with their day. So that's usually a couple hours. And sometimes it happens that way. Sometimes we're filling in the second verse or the bridge or a couple lines, through text afterwards, but that's the goal.
As an artist myself, I would get my biggest inspiration at nighttime. It had to be dark, and I would usually go sit down, listen to music, put on some incense, candles, whatever I
Yeah.
had, and kind of hit my emotions
Yeah.
because, and then those emotions would play an image in my head that I wanted to make. And then when I got the image, then it was like, okay, now I know what to do.
Yeah.
For you, what is your special little ritual when it comes to writing?
Well, I think sometimes ideas will just hit me in everyday life, which is great. It's like my husband is very familiar with me going, hold on a second. And I'm trying to get this idea hashed out real quick. But if I'm intentionally writing by myself, I'm most inspired in the forest, in the woods, up on the mountain. Here in Arizona, we live in the valley and we live in the city, but I've grew up heading up that hill. It's about an hour and a half to where you're just surrounded by trees and have that mountain air. And that's really where I feel closest to God, where I feel the most like myself, where I feel like I have all the kind of the walls come down and the distractions go away. So that's my ideal process. Other than that, it is being alone, kind of similar to what you're saying. I am a night owl, so I definitely can tap into that stuff more at night. And just being in a space by myself, I like to be able to be home alone when I'm writing because I like to walk around the house and sing lines. And then I'll get the idea and sit down and I'll put it in my phone or write it out. Sometimes writing it just is, I don't know, there's something about the paper and the pen that I love. I have so many notes and scribbles from over the years that I've kept for songs that became some of my biggest songs because they're so nostalgic to me. I love seeing like, oh, I crossed that out and I decided to do this. And I love looking back at the process.
And with that, what we're going to do, since I brought up the night and you brought up the night, let's talk a little bit about your song, Night Riding. Tell me a little bit about the song.
So Kaylee North was in the co-write with me that day, and she's an awesome writer. And we got along, like we hit it off, and it felt like we had known each other already for a while. And she started that song. She came into the co-write with that idea, and it just felt so right to me. And so when I jumped in on it, my goal was to recreate one of my favorite feelings in the whole world. And that is what I just referenced, that drive from the valley up to the mountain here in Arizona. And even live, when we do this song, people can kind of tap into that, especially when I'm singing it here in my home state. People know exactly what I'm talking about. But I think it's universal, that night drive. For me, it's like right after sunset and dusk is settling in, you can start to see the outline. Here, it's like the outline of the surrounding mountains, and everything starts to look kind of blue and purple and peaceful. And when the weather's beautiful, you're rolling down your windows, and the scenery changes so much when you're taking the drive here. We go from low desert to high desert to red rock. To pines, to aspens and pines. And it's just amazing to just see everything change. So we really wanted to capture that feeling. And especially like if you're with somebody that you really care about, windows down, head up the hill, you just don't want the night to end. So that was that, we wanted that windows down kind of magical
That's definitely probably going to be one of my favorite songs because I can relate
feeling.
to that 100%.
Yeah.
And it is playing now, everybody. When we come back after the song, we will be talking to her about more stuff, and it's going to get even more interesting. So don't go anywhere. Enjoy the song. We'll be back in a minute.
Heading over to you. nothing better than driving with you.
Everybody, we're back. I hope you enjoyed the song. And we're going to be talking to Sherry Rowe now about her experiences in music. Now, when you're an artist, it's the art always comes first. It's always the most important part. But at the same time, it's still a business, unless you're doing it as a hobby. And so making that business work is tough. And if you've ever known anything about the entertainment industry, I don't care what facet of it you're in, you will understand it is a really tough business to be in. There, you don't know who to trust. You don't know if you're getting the best deal. And making your way in this world is very hard, especially if you don't have somebody that you trust to help you navigate it. So, Sherry, tell us a little bit about your experience in the music industry so far.
Yeah, I mean, I have been really fortunate to have amazing people to work with to look out for me because that is important that you have people you can trust, as you mentioned. My husband plays bass in my band, and so we've always done this together. He, when I met him, I mean, he has such a mind for business. So early on, I mean, we've always been in business for ourselves. Even before we started really pursuing music together, we've always kind of had an entrepreneurial spirit, if you will. And I think that has really helped us. That's been on our side. And we really set ourselves up for having an income that could sustain us in business for those early days pursuing music when it really doesn't make money. You know, it takes a while, just like any small business. I think you have to really have a mind for So we pursue this career, right? And sometimes we have stars in our eyes. I kind of knew already that this wasn't going to happen overnight. I'm thankful that I didn't kind of get caught up in thinking that it would. But you really have to be in it for the long haul. It takes a lot of work. So like any small business, what do they say? You know, it's like, what is it, 3 to 5 years before you start really like taking a solid income for yourself? Or, you know, there's so many statistics about building a business. I think it's important to have guidance in that way. For me, we created that sustainable income while we were starting to build our next business, which was music. And I think it's important to do as much as you can on your own. For a long time, I did all the booking. We did PR for ourselves until we had enough to really talk about. Then we brought in PR. I think that's another mistake, bringing in too many people before you're ready, right? Because PR is, you know, they take what you have and they hold it up before everybody and they say, hey, look at this, you know, but if you don't have the thing to look at yet, it's premature to start paying somebody to do something like that. PR isn't going to create something that isn't already happening. That doesn't happen. I think having producers and engineers and people to guide you on the creative side can be really important in the beginning. It can help you kind of formulate who you are and what you're capable of. But as I've grown, I'm realizing which areas I can kind of take on as a musician and as a business owner. You know, how do I have enough experience now to decide who's going to play on my next record? I know enough people. We're going to record this here, but then we're going to bring in this person and this person. We don't necessarily have to go into a studio for several days. We can kind of subcontract and build this and hire people ourselves. And I think really having someone who has a mind for business, if they're not directly involved with what you're doing, consulting with someone about that is very important because it helps you to remember that you're working, that this is a job. There's a part of it that's euphoric and you it's free flowing and that creative part of it is beautiful. But there's the nuts and bolts side, and it's very important that you have someone to help guide you through that.
It's true. I mean, I look back at like some of the 1940s and 50s and stuff like that. The idea was always to get on the radio. And the only way that you did that is you had to come up with a song, couple songs, and then you had to go to a label, pitch your music to them, and once you got in, you were set because they did everything for you. But then the computer came out. And then when the computer came out, we got social media, and then we had things like YouTube and all these other outlets that literally changed the dynamic of how music works. But it's also more expensive to do it that way, but you have more freedom. You get to keep the money that you would be giving to the label. You're not set to contracts. You're not set to anything that you don't want to do. But it's a lot harder to make it happen. I'm sure money's probably one of them, but what are some of the other things that you've run into as an independent artist that is it's a challenge to overcome, and how did you manage to overcome it?
I mean, some of these things I'm still working on. I think my biggest challenge is social media. And I don't know why for sure, but I think it's just my personality. I really love connecting with people, and it can be a challenge for me to kind of create these moments and put them out there and versus like really being with someone. But I'm learning and I'm working on that because it's vital to work on the areas that you can see weakness. You know, I can see that that's an area that I really need to work on because we have to go with the flow. You know, everything changes and things don't stay the same. And if we want to continue to reach people, we have to be able to ebb and flow with changing times and the different ways that we reach people. I think obviously, you know, financially, that's in any business at any given time, whether your business is brand new or it's been around forever, that's always going to be a subject, you know, that needs to be talked about and figured out every quarter or every year. And where are we going to spend money? And I think as an independent artist, that's an important question that you need to ask yourself. Where can your money be utilized the most? Is it in PR? Is it in recording? Is it in campaigns to get more streams? Which again, that has to be with a very reputable promoter. But there are so many different aspects of this industry. I think booking now more than ever, I think the live show is our most valuable asset. I think it was before AI, but now especially with AI, I think being able to connect people in a live setting is going to become more of a novelty, something really special that we can only bring. Like AI can't do that yet. But I think that's going to be important. And somebody recently told me, and I took this with me, moving forward, it's not going to necessarily be your what, like what you do as an artist. It's going to be your why. People are going to connect you as a person, your story, what separates you from everybody else, because there's no shortage of amazingly talented people, both authentically writing music and creating through AI. So it's an ocean of talent. I think you just need to know who you are and be good to that.
I agree. And that's sometimes where the you have much better chances, and because you control it as opposed to somebody else. But at the same time, going to the label doesn't necessarily make it bad either. It's just a little bit a different flow of how it works.
Sure.
But also, one of the things that I've always had as an artist is they're like, oh, well, you just do art, so you really I don't want to pay for it.
Oh.
But that's your bread and butter. If you
Yeah.
don't sit there and get money for your music, you're not going to be able to continue to put it more out.
Yeah.
So what is your happy medium when it comes to stuff like that? Because you'd kind of want to put some stuff out there for people to listen to
Sure.
and stuff, but you don't want to give away your whole income.
No, you don't. And I think there's a business perspective on that, and then there's an emotional transaction that needs to be considered as well, even a spiritual one, I would say. But on the practical side, I think it's just like any other business. I think there are some shows that I do that I would consider strategic. So if and of course my band and my team, we're paying them. I mean, that they're doing their job. So they're not on the hook for something that I want to do that doesn't pay as well. They don't know what's going on. My husband and I are building our business. Everybody on the team doesn't need to know all the ins and outs of that. But sometimes I'll take a hit financially if it makes sense to grow my fan base in a certain area that I haven't played before, or open up for somebody that is really great that I've either always wanted to open up for, or quite frankly, it makes sense practically for the business to have that exposure. So those decisions are business ones. And then on the flip side of that, the emotional transaction that takes place, if we are always giving away our heart and soul, and we're doing it, and people are saying, but you get this exposure, or gosh, we just love your music so much, and our crowd needs to hear it. And, quite often, people, most of the time without realizing it, are taking advantage of our drive to want to connect with people. And I think that has to be guarded very carefully. I recently heard someone talking about this transaction that takes place. And we as creatives have this power to bring healing and joy and, so many different emotions through our music. I think it's really important that we are leading from a healed place, knowing who we are and knowing that we have this gift that is precious and guarding that. If we're leading from a healed place, then we are bringing strength to the world. A pastor once said to me years ago, and this has stuck with me forever, and he was talking about it in life, but I think in music and this transaction that takes place from the stage, you can definitely apply it. We need to be performing in this instance from affirmation, not for affirmation. So it's very important to be delivering all of this from a healed place, so we know when we can decide and take the reins and say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to give this away. And then it becomes a beautiful thing instead of feeling like we're just being taken from all the time, because we deserve to be paid. We deserve to.
I mean, I remember back in the day with Napster. It was like thing to do until they started realizing, hey, we can find who's doing what. But I think what people say, they look at like these really top performers, like let's just take Bad Bunny because he was just in the Super Bowl, and they could say, wow, look how much money he makes, and look what he has, look what he drives, look what he's wearing. He doesn't need the money, but that's not for anybody else to judge. But
No.
at the same time, when you buy music online, or when you play it on something like YouTube, what I don't think they understand is that you get like a fraction, like 25 cents.
Oh,
It's not much.
it's
And
not.
so, therefore, that 25 cents adds up, and it's harder to get than it used to be before. So, kind of tell people what your take is on this and why it's important to support these artists.
Well, I think in when everything really started to shift to streams rather than downloads, I think we all were trying to really hang on to those downloads. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like a download, when someone actually buys your single or your album, we do make more money, bit by bit. But I think that ship has sailed. I think there's not a whole lot we can do about that. And again, going back to changing with the times, quite frankly, because I'm not an artist who is having millions of streams, there are sometimes when I'm looking at releasing music as PR. I'm getting my music to people. That's what's important. It's helping, and this is from a business perspective, because from an artist perspective, obviously, I'm putting my music out for reasons that have much more depth than that. But from a business perspective, putting music out really is a way to market yourself, to help people decide who you are, to help people connect with your music in a way so that they'll come to a show. Really, playing shows is the v most viable way to make an income in music. So, yeah, I mean, I've resolved with, times have changed. So I'm just adjusting with
Just roll with
it.
it. And with that, we are going to be playing your next song, which is called The Heavy. And that's kind of heavy stuff that we just talked about. It's not the fun part of it. So tell me about this particular song, and what do you hope people take from it?
Mark Addison Chandler and Warren Garrett were in the co-write with me that day, and we wrote it long before the days of COVID. We wrote it really from the perspective of how artists want to give back and join, like, with nonprofits and with charities, and kind of shine a light on work that maybe we're not doing hands-on all the time, but we have this platform to be able to say, "Hey, look at what this organization is doing." And we love doing that as artists. I feel like it's a great way to take our talent and use it for something so good. And in this particular write, we were talking about really getting to know about the causes, really learning about them, and not just saying, "Hey, I'm associated with fill in the blank," just because it looks good, which, most of us are really connecting with these organizations. And for me in particular, there was one that I was working with, and I got to know so many young people who have aged out of foster care, and they have these stories that are just so heavy, literally. And I would see them kind of come into this program, and they wouldn't make eye contact, and you could just see the weight of the world on them. And they have just these horrific stories, some of them. And as they were in this program that gave them not only job skills, but taught them that they're valuable and that they have purpose, and that they have the potential to have family and have a place in this world. And I would see them a couple months later, and there would be a twinkle in their eye, and they would smile, or they'd come up and hug me. And it's amazing when you just pour into someone's life how you see the change happen. Well, Mark and Warren and I were talking about how some of these interactions, you walk away from a benefit or a show, and you're with these people, and you kind of take all this heaviness with you. Like, these are real people, and these are really happening in the world. And so we talked about how each of us has the power to speak into someone's life, or to show up when someone needs help. And it could be a small thing, a small act of kindness, or a really big gesture, and really showing up to be hands-on and help someone who's going through something. Well, the song was recorded, and I loved it, and I was so happy with it. And I struggled with recording the vocal the first time because I had a close friend who was waiting on a really scary medical diagnosis. And so we actually had to stop. And my engineer was like, "Wow, this one's important to you, isn't it?" And I said, "Yeah." And I kind of told him what was going on. He said, "You know what? Let's come back in a couple of days." So we did it again. And I was in a place where I could kind of tap in and not let my emotions kind of take over completely. Well, then COVID came. All the studios got shut down in Nashville. It was not mixed or mastered yet. It was kind of being held hostage along with other songs I did. So further into COVID, they started coming back. Like, studios were opening, it was finished, and I couldn't think of a better time to release this song, So it came out during one of the darkest times we've ever experienced in this world, and we all have the power to make a difference in the smallest ways and in some of the most grand ways.
So, with that being said, we have the heavy playing right now, and when we come back, we have the shortest segment of it of the show, which is where we're going to be talking about her personally. And I think she's going to have a lot of fun with that. And then we'll be playing her last song. So, right after this song, we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. All right, we're back, and this is the last segment of the show. We're getting to know Cherry in a more personal setting. So this is the fun part of the show, and it's always fun to learn about us and talk about some of the things that we love. So let's kind of get started with this. I know you're married. I know you were talking about your husband throughout the show. Where did you guys meet?
Oh man, we met at the mall. So I was, I had a friend that I was working with, and I was working at a clothing store, and she said, "You got to meet this guy. He's a bass player." And she went to him and said, "You got to meet this girl. She's a singer." And we were both wanting to start a band together. So we met at the mall. Our first conversations were at the food court. And I just remember thinking, gosh, his eyes are just so bright. I just felt like I had to keep looking away because he was like, it was distracting because I just fell for him right away. Yeah, we got married 6 months after we met, and we've been playing music all over the country and the world. And it's so much fun. It's like, we don't ever have to say goodbye to each other, and we like working together. So it's perfect.
And it's ironic that you found a bass player.
I know.
So, you know, I was expecting some story like, oh, God, I didn't even give him like the time of day for a little while. And then he finally broke me down or something like that. But no, that's a sweet story because it's not always something that happens. Fall in love at the first glance.
I had been through so much already as a teenager. And so my only hesitation at first was like, can this guy be real? Because he was just amazing, you know? So that was my only hesitation. But it obviously didn't take me long to figure out that he was the real deal.
What is one of your most favorite places to vacation at?
Oh my goodness. Well, when we toured Poland, that was like a dream come true. It was Fantastic. And obviously, that wasn't a vacation. So I would say, believe it or not, I love camping. There's this spot up in the White Mountain in Arizona, and we've been going there for years. And my dad's military pins are in a tree up there. He passed away a while ago. And we have so many memories as a family. And Kevin and I have so many memories there, my husband. And it's the place where I just feel the most like myself. Like, I don't, I'm not getting ready to get on stage. I'm not, putting on the whole bit. I'm just hanging out with the dogs and cooking in the woods. And we try to get as far off grid as we can. We take a satellite phone for emergencies, and there's so much wildlife, and it's truly out in the middle of nowhere. That's my favorite.
So, on your bucket list, we all have a bucket list. What is
Yeah.
the most important thing you want to have that you accomplish on that?
Oh my gosh. Wow. That's kind of hard to answer because there's different things for different reasons. And I'm just obviously you the listeners and you have gathered from this show that I tend to fall on the deep thinking side of things. So I think most important for me, I love the crowds and I love building my career, and that's important to me. And I have goals and bucket list things for that, and playing the Opry and or the Ryman and things along those lines. But really, at the end of the day, knowing that the people closest to me, the people that I interacted with, felt seen and like I heard that what they were saying, and I gave them space to be them, and that they felt safe to really show who they were with me, and that we could connect on that level, and that they feel loved. I think that's the most important thing on my bucket.
So with me, I'm one of those people that are, t-shirt, pants, just kicking it, enjoying life. And when it comes to food, I like everything. I'm a garbage disposal. I will try anything once. But my go-to food is like pizza and wings. What is your go-to food?
Oh my goodness. I love eating too, and I love cooking. So my husband loves cooking. Everybody in our family loves to cook. So we are always, every time we go out to eat, we're either saying, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing. Let's recreate it at home," or we're disappointed because we're like, "We could have, if they would have done this or that, like they could have made it better." We just love dissecting recipes. My go-to food, I mean, in Arizona, I mean, chips and salsa, really good Mexican food. Oh my gosh. I mean, shredded beef enchiladas with green sauce. That's a go-to. I also really love Italian food. So I'm cooking a lot of Italian food all the time. I love caprese and like balsamic reduction with like a glass of red wine. I love making a really good sauce, with ground sirloin and pork and Italian sausage and peppers, and cooks all day. And but yeah, I would say snacks. It's usually gonna be chips and salsa and like an Arnold Palmer iced tea and lemonade mix. Yeah, but I'm definitely a foodie. We grow lots of herbs on our side yard, so we love cooking with things we grow. And food is really special. I mean, it's like it's delicious and it's yummy, but it's also a big moment. I love making a moment out of food.
Food and music go very well together because they
Yes.
accomplish the same thing. It really does. Now, for snacks, what would be your favorite snack?
Gosh, I love snacks in the afternoon. My mom, she's no longer with us, and she was always a big coffee in the afternoon kind of person. So for like sweet, for like salty snacks, I'm big on like mixed nuts and, chips and salty. I love salty things. Wheat thins. I need to try to not buy wheat thins because I will literally inhale them. But Pringles are usually with me at every show. I have pictures of Pringles in Europe. I have pictures of Pringles at some of the biggest shows I've done in the green room. I actually recorded a long time ago and I couldn't get this high note, and I had Pringles with me in the room. And the engineer, I kept trying to hit it. It was a really big, long high note, and it was just, my voice was not cooperating. And I said, "Hold on a second." And I took a little drink of something and I ate a few Pringles, not anticipating that it would help, but just thought, I need some salt. So I came back and I hit this note, and the engineer literally said, "Whatever you just did," he's like, "don't ever stop doing it." And so now it's kind of like this good luck charm, this a kind of OCD moment where I gotta have my Pringles with me, and I just love them. So that's probably, most people would say they know that's my favorite.
And outside of the band, your band, who is your favorite? band to listen
Oh
to
my
or
God.
artist?
Right now, it changes all the time. But right now, Rustin Kelly, he's in Nashville, and we were just out there. We saw him at the Ryman, and I've loved his story. I love his writing. I love the tone in his voice. His band wrote and produced this latest record with him. I just think he's an amazing artist, and he lets his vulnerability show. And Brett Shirokey, who is an amazing songwriter out in Nashville and an exceptional artist in his own right. So, yeah, his album Rock, Paper, Scissors, go check it out. Fantastic writing.
And when you're not touring, you're just sitting down enjoying yourself. What do you like to do for fun?
Oh man, my husband and I love to cook, so we do that a lot. When we have a day off, we're usually thinking, what do we want to make? And we go to the grocery store together and we're picking out all the produce, and that's really fun. Camping is a huge part of my life, anything outdoors. So if we can combine both, which we do when we're camping, it's like we go off grid, but we also take everything that we need to make these amazing meals in the middle of the forest. So if I can combine being outside and great food, perfect. And then really practically speaking, day to day, being with family, like whatever we're doing. Everybody in my family is musical in some way. So we've got a studio here at the house. So on Sunday dinners, people are coming in and out and somebody's showing somebody a song or asking a question, what do you think I should do in verse two? Or somebody's recording and if there's little kids here too, the kids are dancing and food, music, that's it.
All you need. It's
Yeah.
all you need. And with that is the end of the show. And we're going to be playing her brand new single now called Too Good to Go. And tell us a little bit about this and how can people find you?
People can find me. They can start at the website, sharirowe.com, SHARIROWE. And there's links to everything there. You can stream my music anywhere you're used to listening to music or downloading it, YouTube. This song, Too Good to Go, really is about how beautiful life is. And after facing some really heavy challenges this last year, medically, I'm just so aware and grateful for every moment. And I have a beautiful life that I'm grateful for with beautiful people in it. And it's those everyday moments like coffee or camping or just having a laugh and a conversation that add up to this landscape and this atmosphere that you don't want to leave. So really, it's about holding on and getting through and realizing that I'm not done yet.
We're not done yet. As long as we have breath in our lungs and a beat in our heart, it's not done. And Sherry, thank you for so much for coming on. This is a lot of fun, and I really hope people took a lot of insight to this. Maybe you inspire somebody, or maybe you'll just inspire a new fan, which would be even better.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And guys, it is playing now. It is once again Too Good to Go. And once this is over, we will have a lot more people coming on here doing the same thing. You can check out her music on WREB because this is going to be continuously playing through there. And you can also find us on WREBradio.com. Have a great day, everybody.
Small talk turns to a laugh when my eyes catch yours and you're looking right back. I love when I'm staring at the moon, then I'm calling you. I love when every room in this house is full, backyard movie stars cuddled up with you. I love everything that I've got, and it's a lot. And I don't live with a lot of regrets, just know that I don't. Said all I gotta say. Too good to go. If I can't sleep, it's 'cause I don't want the dream to be the only thing I have left. Can't hang up the phone 'cause I haven't said all I gotta say yet.